Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, welcome back,
everybody. I'm not going to fuck you up this time.
To Faking Movies. Yep, this one's staying in. Episode 55 this time, everybody. So I'm joined, as always, by my dear friend, Zach. What's up, Zach?
How is it going?
Pretty good. I'm also joined with my human sound effect reel, fucking Michael Winslow Reborn over here. Ooh. Seth Fart Noise. What's up, Seth?
What? I didn't make a single crazy sound yet.
Did you guys see that the THX sound effect, they released the sheet music for it?
I haven't seen that. There was an entire chorus that did it, like in all the harmonies and all that shit. It was crazy.
So try that one, fucko.
Are you talking to me or?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Okay, yeah.
So this is episode 55. Thank you again for tuning in, everybody. And as always, check out our Twitter, check out our Instagram, check out our websites. You know, we've some of that stuff gets updated more frequently than the others, but you know, it's there. Yeah,
Just go to Twitter. Just do that one. Yeah,
yeah, Twitter. mostly.
Instagram is not bad.
Yeah, sure. There's
mostly
movie
feeds
posters.
Directly to Twitter, but
sure.
Before we get started today, guys, I just wanted to mention something. Just cutting back to a conversation we were having before we started recording. You know, as of this point, the new Star Wars movie Solo has been out for a few weeks. Do you guys think there are dogs in Star Wars?
We're not
like Mogs, like half man, half dog.
They're their own best friends.
We're not gonna get into Chewbacca's not a dog, right? Like that.
He's definitely not a dog.
Okay,
no, he's a Wookiee.
I was just checking. Okay,
God.
Then I
can you even spell his home planet? I don't think so, Zach.
Kishik? Probably not. No.
How many Ys are in it, Zach?
More than I care for. That's for goddamn sure.
You know, there's a really.
It's almost like a Welsh word with that many Ys.
He's burning the Welsh over and over again on this show.
Oh, well, this movie, the movie we're doing today, stars a Welshman.
So. Sure enough. Yep.
That is true. There's a joke from the old Expanded Universe novels, the Thrawn trilogy, where Leia learns how to speak the language of the Wookiees, and she shows up on Kashyyyk, and she can converse really easily with this one Wookiee, and she's like, wait a minute, does Chewbacca just have a speech impediment? Because I can never understand what the fuck he's saying.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah. So that's our required Star Wars bust in there, I guess.
Uh-huh, sure enough.
So I guess no dogs then, huh?
I guess not. I mean, there are other animals that have the same, you know, kind of
function
as a dog.
Yeah, I guess
there's
gotta be
droid,
more salacious crumbs out
you know,
there.
There's like.
It feels to me kind of like ghosts or, I don't know, God. Like, until you can show me, I'm off board on that one. Like, I'm all right.
You're a positivist in the Star Wars dog?
No. Like, until I see one in one of these movies, I'm going to go with
no. Oh, how many swans do you need to count before you can say there are no black swans?
Now, sure. I do one more quick question. Star Wars dogs. Would a Star Wars dog use the Force like this, or would he use it like this?
You son of a bitch.
I love that stupid fucking joke. Yep,
it is a good one.
So should we get started for this week, guys?
Yeah,
probably.
Okay. So as our listeners, I'm sure, know, we thrive on our cinematic blind spots here at Faking Movies. And this week, I'm going to be doing a movie, and I got to say, my blind spot was clearly caused by all the stars in the fucking sky burning out my retinas for this movie, because...
Yeah. Well, maybe.
This is also the first Lee movie that we've not, like, that wasn't so obscure that we had to, like, scour the entire fucking internet for it and go back to, like, before they used color on film and shit.
Yeah. None of our movies have been before 1939, so,
hyperbole. Hyperbole.
You did have to watch one black and white movie, but that was an artistic choice.
It fucking ruined my life, is all I'm saying. Yeah.
I really enjoyed both of the... I didn't really enjoy them, but I enjoyed them well enough. Both of the black and white movies we've watched so far.
No. Oh, what was the other one? Last Picture Show?
And They Shoot Horses.
I didn't realize that was in black and white.
Was that black and white?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe it
was. Yes, it
was. Yeah. Okay. That might be one of the older ones we've done. I wonder what the oldest one we've done is. Probably that. Chinatown? No, not Chinatown.
Chinatown's pretty old.
Yeah, I don't know that we've done anything beyond the mid to late 60s.
Yeah.
Just you wait.
Oh, boy.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's not this one, and it'll be pretty obvious once I get into the cast.
Well, I mean, maybe it's like a Muppets Babies of late 90s stars.
They were all children? That'd be super cool.
Well, just you wait, actually, now that you mention them being children.
What?
SpaghettiOs. Oh, my.
Okay, well, let's get into it. We did, this week, The Tailor of Panama.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Lee, what peeps did we give you?
You gave me Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, just a murderous row of people, though.
Yeah. Jeffrey Rush.
Uh-huh.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan Gleeson.
Uh-huh.
And Danny Rads himself, Daniel Radcliffe.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hell of a cast, guys.
Hang on.
Yeah, it sure is.
I didn't clock that last one, and now I have some questions. Okay.
You don't remember who he was in the film, do you?
No, I sure don't. I mean, there's only really okay, one person he can be, but wowzers.
I'll explain it to you later.
All right. Yeah,
I like the idea of you just sit tight, Zach. I'll explain it when you're older.
It's plainly obvious, but boy, it wasn't at the time. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, well, rewatch a couple scenes and you'll see it.
Yeah, he clearly takes his penis out and there's a horse there.
I mean, great Equus joke. Very good.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love a topical Equus joke? take that, listener.
So I'll get started here.
Please.
Daniel Radcliffe is a bike delivery boy, and his route every day includes running the length of the Panama Canal, which, before you even jump in, Seth, is about 50 miles, so it's totally reasonable that someone could bike it every day.
A child? A human child?
he's a tween. He can do it.
All right.
It's also
paved. I mean, it's doable. It'll take a couple hours, but it's doable.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Hmm.
So, for his his,
I'll let you have this one.
Thank you. For his delivery route on each side, the start of the day and the end of the day, there is a haberdashery shop. One of them is run by Pierce Brosnan, and the other one is run by Jamie Lee Curtis. They're they are brother and sister, and they have not spoken in years. Ah. Think like Puma and Adidas in that town in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you not know about that, Zach?
No, that sounds fun.
It's the same family.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Yeah, they had like a falling out at some point. Wow. They started. Yeah. Yeah.
They get you.
And then Ruse showed up, and they were like, "Oh, you can put a condom into your shoe."
I mean, you're not wrong, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know that anyone was ever stopping you from putting a condom in your shoe. It's just that they built a dedicated pocket.
I don't know what else he used that pocket for.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
I don't know, like a weird-shaped piece of gum or something?
A mashed-up piece of gum?
a book of matches.
I don't think that would fit in there.
And then you can make a joke about your feet being on fire.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
Anyway.
And it'd be really fun if you, like, open it up and lit a match off of the bottom just as you opened up that weird zipper, and you're like, now I'm an arsonist.
Hey, does this company still exist? Like, is Sam Jackson's hat needs keeping them in business? Because I think we just came up with a great marketing campaign.
That was Kangol. I think that's an entirely different situation, isn't it?
So I thought Kangol was Kangol Ruse, and Ruse were that company. Mm.
You may have just invented this dream world, but, like, I'm into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea because I am not
popular. I never had shoes like that.
Or dope really ass hats.
I really thought you were going to stop at shoes.
Only the popular kids in my town were allowed shoes.
Okay. I'll get back into my movie.
Yeah, so back to your movie about kangaroos.
Yeah. So Pierce Brosnan and Jamie Lee Curtis are strange brother and sister rival haberdashers. Mm-hmm. So one day Danny Radcliffe asks his father, Brendan Gleeson, why the two don't speak. Even as to a child, this seems nonsensical, especially since he, just like everyone in the town, knows they were once in business together, and at the time, they were the largest exporters of Panama hats in the world.
Mm-hmm. Sure enough. Mm-hmm.
There we go. Mm-hmm. The breakup of the business is legendary in their area, of course, because it was such a big part of the town, but no one actually knows why it happened. So Brendan begins to tell him the story, some stories about when the three of them were all children together. So this means we're going to need some more child actors. So young Pierce Brosnan is going to be played by Rupert Grint.
And God damn it.
Young Jamie Lee is going to be played by Emma Watson. Uh-huh, and Daniel Radcliffe can pull double duty and play the young version of his father also, Brendan.
I'm right in the middle of the Harry Potter audiobooks, and I want to hate this, but I'm so on board. I'm so fully on board.
Why are you listening to the Harry Potter audiobook?
I got a lot of time, and they were easily findable in, let's say, less than legal fashion. So
yeah. You should listen to Wizard People, Dear Reader, while you're at it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that, it's a much is that better a meta version thing?
Oh, yeah, it's very good.
Okay,
mm-hmm, it's very good.
Right. Also, Zach, while you're at it, you should definitely download a bunch of Metallica. So.
Hey, Lars, if you're listening, get fucked. No one likes you.
By the way, Napster still exists, in case you were wondering. Somehow. So yeah, in case it wasn't clear at this point, this movie, my movie at least, is being made in the early 2000s, because they're all going to be like first or second Harry Potter movie age at this
point. Where would they have had the time? But anyway, okay, go on.
Whatever. They're stars.
Yeah, sure. In this flashback scene, we can even see then as children that the brother and sister had a friendly rivalry going on between
Robbie them. Coltrane is about to show up and just mess up everything.
Oh, goddamn, with his fucking umbrella. So we also get to see that Jeffrey Rush was their father, and he encouraged their competitive nature. This isn't quite a dads are the worst moment, but it's pretty close.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah, okay. I can see that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after this story, like we find out that Brendan really only knows this little bit because as they got older, they all grew apart. So he encourages his son, Danny, Danny Rads, to
Danny
to
Aiello.
Go, yeah. to go marry Cher. He encourages Danny to actually go ask Pierce and Jamie Lee if, you know, what happened, if he wants to know.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So then we get to the main portion of the movie where we see Pierce and Jamie taking turns narrating tales from their youth.
So
we can start to build an insight into their falling out. And as these stories, you know, advance in time, we're going to age up the cast for the younger versions. So I'm thinking teen Jamie Lee is going to be played by Lindsay Lohan since they were in Freaky Friday together.
Oh, at that point, sure. Yeah, I can see that.
And then teen Pierce Brosnan. I'm thinking Adam Brody from The O.C. just because it's time period appropriate.
All right.
Interesting.
Sure.
And I'd like to see him stumble through a fucking brogue, you know? Like, I don't think he could do that voice. But...
Yeah.
Okay.
So eventually we'll get to some vignettes where the actual actors are just playing younger versions of themselves.
Yeah.
They'll have different haircuts and shit, you know,
do. Yeah, naturally.
So what we learn through these stories is that their father's attempts to build a competition between the two actually drove them apart over the years and that they do miss each other. Their relationship just deteriorated over the years. So when their father died, they broke up the business because they just didn't have any reason to keep it together anymore. Yeah. But over the years, whatever animosity was there has waned, and they really do miss each other.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we're going to get into, like, the little... This is... I kind of picture this movie as a little bit of a fairy tale, almost.
Sure, sure.
Because so Daniel Radcliffe is a delivery boy.
Seth has his stink face on as soon as he's done.
I can see it. So since Daniel Radcliffe is a delivery boy, we're going to have him stumble on some long-lost letters that their father wrote to him before he died.
Okay.
Naturally.
Okay.
And he's going to bring them to Pierce and Jamie. And at this point, we're going to get another one of those vignette-type things that we've been doing for the flashbacks, except Jeffrey Rush is going to narrate it. And basically, these letters that he finds are an apology. And it's him saying that he wishes he could have been a better father because he sees what his competitive nature has done to them.
Wait, so
he wants them.
So dads aren't the worst? That doesn't track.
Dad didn't intend to be the worst, and he feels horrible that his actions caused that.
Oh, God, can that happen in real life? Oh, no.
Not for you anymore.
Yeah, no, not so.
Oh, no.
So. The letters kind of close out with him saying that he wants them to remember that they love each other and that he loves them and that that's more important than any competition they've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a montage of all the good times that they had growing up, because in all the other ones, we just saw like them talking about the thing that they were mad about.
Sure.
So now we just get this montage of them flashing back to being happy and loving each other and being siblings. And while this is going on, and I asked you guys to do some homework today, the Polaris song Everywhere is playing over these scenes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And finally they reach each other in the middle of the canal and they tearfully reunite because all of their old mistakes have been forgiven.
Oh,
so then we get our title card. It says 1 year later. And it's the grand reopening of the Hat Factory. And the whole town is there to celebrate, and Pierce and Jamie are giving a speech, and they've got Danny up on stage with them because he's the one who helped make it all happen. And Zach, you have a sister. I'm sure you've experienced this.
Mm-hmm.
As siblings often do, they complete each other's sentences during this scene.
Oh, damn. Sure enough.
I have never once done that with my brother.
Well, it's because brothers hate each other. But as they're dedicating the factory again, they say to Danny and the crowd, "Together we might be the biggest haberdashery in the world, but for repairing our relationship and helping us to stitch our company back together, you truly are the Tailor of Panama." Then we pull back, we pull back, and we get a real soft focus going as the sun sets over our happy ending.
Oh, man. I thought I was going to have to explain what the word Taylor meant to you at some point, but I'm glad we came around on that one.
I was curious. Did you think like James Taylor was involved? Or...
They all had Taylor guitars.
Oh, we can have a James Taylor song playing over the end credits.
Oh yeah, that's a good choice.
That's fun.
Which one?
Sailing to Philadelphia, obviously.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yep. All right. I'm glad you just had that.
You know, the song that's partially based on the Thomas Pynchon novel, Mason Dixon.
It sure is. We've discussed it in the past. Not on this podcast, but we did a couple of weeks ago talk about it.
Sure.
You know, the duet with my boy Mark Knopfler. Anyway, that's my Tailor of Panama.
I wish it had more Thomas Pynchon in it.
Oh.
Well, he is a recluse, so I don't think that was going to happen.
Tough order.
Yeah, fair.
Man, that was touching as hell. That was great. Mm-hmm. That was nice. All right. Seth, you want to give the IMDb's, and then I'll do the quick summary thing?
Yeah, I actually didn't get up the page, but here we are.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. it's shorter than I thought it was.
It's very brief, yeah.
All right, Lee, you ready for this?
That's good. Yeah.
A tailor living in Panama reluctantly becomes a spy for a British agent.
Okay.
Boy, does that not cover it just at all. Not even fucking close.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Yeah, so this was based off of a John le Carré novel.
Oh,
Yeah. Okay.
So, it's like, definitely about a spy.
Yeah, it's like a really shitty Tinker Tailor.
Wait, why does he have more than one spy story with the word Taylor in the title?
Because he fucking loves tailors. Have you ever met a British person who doesn't?
Yeah. Oh,
no. All right. Well, they're wrong. Okay, man. Zach, you said that you came up with a short summary.
I mean,
unlike the episode I listened to today, Citizen Ruth, that took like 45 minutes for me to get through the fucking plot.
Yeah.
So, Zach, what you got? What you got for me?
So, yeah, I did my best. This took 3 editing passes, and it's still a bit long for my taste, but anyway. So,
okay.
This is a real doozy. Strap in.
All right, 90 seconds on the clock.
Oh, not even fucking close.
I mentioned that there's like British agents involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What nationality would you guess that Brendan Gleeson would play?
Well, I would assume Irish.
Try again.
Yeah. Well, prepare to be surprised.
Yeah. We'll get to that in depth. I am sure.
Oh my god.
Can I before we get started? I want to point out because I don't know if the rest of the cast that you guys didn't give me would change this at all, but in grand tradition of a movie from the time period that I set mine in, I had a movie set in Central America with only white characters, and it sounds like
definitely hedging on that.
Yeah,
sounds like it might be the same for the real.
I mean, John le Carré is a very British man, so
despite the pronunciation,
Well, you know what his real name is?
No,
it is David John Moore Cornwell.
Jesus, that is the most.
That's so biblical.
Shit.
Wow.
Yeah. And one more thing to paint your understanding of this movie. The director is John Borman.
Okay, I know that name, but you're gonna have to refresh my memory.
Yeah. So John Borman did, for instance, Deliverance in 72. He was nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards, but never won one.
Sure.
You know what his follow-up to Deliverance was?
No.
Zardoz.
Whoa, that came after Deliverance?
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So Zardoz was his passion project.
Well,
yeah.
Clearly.
And then things like Excalibur, which has like an even more murderer's row of actors. I mean, it's got Patrick Stewart, it's got Helen Mirren, it's got Liam Neeson.
Jesus, does this guy know every British actor ever lived? Maybe.
Well, it's a small island.
It's not.
I mean, I guess.
So there's like a grand British theater tradition that I think a lot of British film actors subscribe to. That is, if you get offered a job, you take it.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has definitely written some mixed bags of movies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or directed, rather. He like writes and directs most of these, though. So
now, I might have missed this, but did you give me a year?
Oh, yeah, this is 2001. Yeah.
Oh, my God, I nailed it.
Yeah, fuck. So as we were talking about that, I was like, shit, at least one Harry Potter movie, I think two had come out by this point, so I'm even more fucking confused as to where Daniel Radcliffe plays into this.
I think it was one, because I'm pretty sure Sorcerer's Stone came out the same year as Fellowship of the Ring, and that was 2001.
That was 2001,
so it was this one. Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah, but I'm guessing that this was filmed long before that, because Daniel Radcliffe in this is a tiny child.
Actual child? Yeah.
It's Jeffrey Rush's son, by the way, Zach.
Yes, no, I mean, there was only two children in this movie, so it had
Was an entire school full of Jewish children.
Oh, well, sure, and a bunch of Panamanian ones, but...
Pause. Yeah. So, this is a movie set in Panama, and it's full of British people and Jewish people. I haven't heard any Panamanian characters yet.
Oh, just you
well,
wait.
Well, okay, well, I'll let Zach get into it.
Okay.
I'll let him get into it.
All right.
I'll stop interrupting him.
I mean, I would not want you to stop interrupting anyone.
I'm not going to.
Yeah, it goes without saying. All right.
Nice.
Pierce is MI6, but fucked up somehow, and so he's punished.
Yeah, exactly. He's like the shittier version of James Bond.
Very, very much shittier, yeah.
Does anyone know the difference between MI6 and MI5? One of them's like the FBI and one of them's like the CIA, but I don't know which is which.
I think MI6 is the CIA sort of one.
That would make sense. They work with the CIA in this movie, I think, so...
Yeah. So Felix Leiter's in it too. Good.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, I do like Felix in most of his roles.
All right. So he fucked up and he's being punished by being sort of sent but also exiled to Panama, which is portrayed.
Yeah, he had an affair with the the Spanish ambassador's mistress or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
He's a real bird dogger, that one. So
I mean, he's Remington Steele. Of course he is.
Yeah.
It's so gross.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Talk about how gross and uncomfortable it is. Yeah. Oh my god.
So he's being sent to Panama, which is portrayed as a massive shithole. A fact no one ever takes issue with in this movie, not even once.
Yeah.
He gets in with Jeffrey Rush, who is the titular tailor, who himself ran away to Panama because of legal troubles. Jeffrey Rush is his inroad to the major players in Panama, by way of Pierce both giving him some money for his outstanding debts and also threatening to out him as a criminal and expose his current debts to his wife and sort of colleagues. They find out via...
Plus, everybody says crazy shit to, your service worker people, like tailors and barbers.
They make tailors out to be, confidants and therapists in this movie. It's very confusing.
It is a very intimate sort of situation when you're hand-tailoring somebody. You're all up in somebody's biz.
Mm-hmm. You're spending some time together and doing some touching.
They talk about how Jeffrey Rush is constantly having to ask people which side they dress to.
This is one of pretty the intimate most thing confusing parts of this movie. I
to you really, because that's totally normal to me. Have you never had to get dance pants?
Clearly
I have not, but they find out via Jamie Lee, who is Rush's wife, who works with Canal Logistics in some fashion, that Panama might sell the canal to a third party, presumed to be the Chinese, to deal with the Noriega fallout and rampant poverty.
Oh, so this is taking place in 2001. This is after the lease on the canal is up?
Yeah. Presumably, yes.
Yeah, I assumed it was set in the 60s or something. No, but this is very good to know.
Yeah.
This is much more modern. And there are all those treaties with the U.S. about how if the canal were to fall in danger, then the U.S. has the right to take it back and bullshit like that,
gotcha.
Based on info obtained by Pierce, MI6 and the U.S. Army, I think the CIA secretly decide to back Brendan Gleeson, inexplicably playing a Panamanian resistance fighter.
Okay.
Now a washed-up drunk as the new president of Panama to preserve order and, most importantly, the canal.
You got to get your puppet in there.
As is common in Central America, yes. So they're going to give the now corrupt Panamanian elite, called the, quote, silent opposition, $15 million to back him and get him into power. Lots of shit happens. As it turns out, there's two levels of misdirection here. First, Jeffrey Rush...
Because it's a Le Carre book.
Yeah, it's massively complicated. Jeffrey Rush made up the silent opposition thing in some misguided personal effort to feel important, it is implied.
So he also would get the $15 million at that
point, right? No, he just wanted to feel part of the thing.
Like $100,000 to pay off all of his debts and all of his friends' debts is what he really wanted.
Yeah, and then that was already promised by Pierce, so it's not clear what the lying got him. Yeah,
I think it was just to be an important person.
Yeah,
okay.
And then the second is that Pierce actually orchestrated the whole money exchange thing with the British ambassador. First thinking they'd never go for it, the governments would never give him the money, and he could just go back to Britain because they'd cancel everything. Then when they inexplicably did say, yeah, we'll give you that money, he decided he's just going to take it and run, and that's going to be his new life. So the U.S. Army almost...
Fortunately, he's somewhere where he can easily get from one side of the world to the other.
very convenient if you're on a boat. That's true.
Or a bike.
Apparently, yeah, sure. So the U.S. Army almost bombs and invades Panama City, but then it's found out that Brendan Gleeson, again, a Panamanian man, has killed himself. But then, so then they don't, inexplicably, just because Jamie Lee told the Panamanian government, and they called the U.S. and just said, please don't bomb us. And so they don't.
It's like, we'll just do your thing.
I guess. Yeah. They gloss over this. I don't know. Yeah. Pierce gets away.
I mean, it's all exposed to be lies. I mean, Brendan Gleeson is only a washed up drunk.
Yes.
And is nothing else, and really never was, but still like has these ideals.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like these
but never ever be military. He just happened to be a buddy of Jeffrey Rush and was therefore implicated.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Pierce gets away and Pierce gets away with all the money, and a final act of being a scumbag, tries to bone down the flight attendant on his escape jet. Jeffrey,
he's been trying to bone everyone,
literally everybody, and they all fucking fall for it. It's maddening. Yeah,
well, Jamie Lee does not.
More on that later too. Yeah.
Okay.
Jeffrey tells Jamie Lee about his past, all the criminal activity, all the debt he's got. In like exactly 15 seconds, she forgives him, and then they end the movie with him making breakfast for their kids.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And then presumably Panama falls into disarray and burns in the background. Like, we never cover what actually happens to the whole.
Yeah, it's
like
cool.
Important it's cool. Bits. Yeah.
And from the ashes, Eddie Van Halen rises to
Panama.
Him and David Lee Roth mount their forces. Yeah.
The economy rises with Cabo Wabo tequila, presumably.
I don't want any of that damn Van Hagar.
Oh, no.
So that's the incredibly confusing plot to this fucking garbage. Like, Seth fucking warned me. You warned me last week. I was like, this might be good. And you're like, it's not. And I still somehow thought it might be.
Something I've heard about like adaptations of his books from people who have read the books are like, it can't work because he does too many misdirects that you just can't fit all, like, to for any of his stories to make sense, you have to be able to fit all the misdirects in it because they all inform a different thing later on.
Yeah,
but to make a 2-hour movie, you can't possibly cover every bit of knowledge that you need to go into the story to make it work.
Yep.
I thought Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was pretty well done, though. I enjoyed that one.
Really? I thought what's his butt really carried it. I didn't know that I didn't think the story was all that amazing. I don't know.
Firth?
No, fucking what's his
Gary Oldman?
Yeah, him.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah. Whatever. Avocados, baby.
Yeah. Avocados for life.
Yeah. This movie.
So for starters, I noted like very early on that this looks so fucking old. I don't know whatever like glossy glow filter they put on shit in this era, but like it looks older than like Son-in-Law from 10 years prior did. Like, it's fucking baffling. It just looks like shit.
Okay, so I can almost guarantee you that Son-in-Law wasn't shot on actual film. I bet you this was. That might have something to do with it.
Maybe. Well, I guess. I don't know.
So Zach watched this like a day before I did, and like the first thing he messaged me was like, this movie, like the directors or makers of this film are desperately trying to like, are sure that they're making gold. I guess.
Yeah.
Is what you said, right?
Yeah.
They're absolutely sure that they're making gold. There's so much like weird poverty shots. There's so many.
They
were making
themselves
an important movie.
Yes, they were making an important movie in quotes.
They really fancied themselves some Spielbergs on this one. Like, you could tell they were just like, oh, this is gonna be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So Jeffrey Rush's character is really confusing because he was a grifter. In the UK, presumably.
Well, kind of. They explain his thing. His crime was like he burned down his brother's.
He was an arsonist.
Yeah, but like
he was an arsonist for his uncle who wasn't really his uncle, but was just the guy who took him in.
Yeah, but it sounded like he only ruse, then. It sounded like he was a good dude and he committed one crime and then like got super fucked because of that one thing. Like, at least that was my impression.
Yeah. Yeah, but so he has this uncle that kind of forced him into this life of crime, and it's not really his uncle. I can't even it's Harold Pinter, if you know who that is.
Yeah,
I mean he's a Nobel laureate in literature.
Whoa. Okay.
Harold Pinter got him to commit arson to get out of some debt, and he ended up in prison, and then he claims that he learned to tailor in prison. And, you know, later in the film, he's talking about all kinds of fabrics and cuts and is like, oh, yes, the alpaca looks fine on you, sir. Of course, of course. And I'm like, what the hell did he learn in prison? How did he learn to be a tailor in prison? Was it one of those situations where, like,
how in other countries they'll rehabilitate people? Is that what you're getting?
No.
Not in the UK.
What my thought is that it's one of those things where you do, like, the hardest version of something, and then when you start doing it the regular way, it's super easy.
Oh, like he was making suits out of, like, garbage bags and, like, needles. Like,
oh, yeah, out of burlap sacks and prison sheets. He was making these beautiful suits. And so when he came to be working with, you know, your actual linen and things like that, it's super easy. Because guess what? It's way easier to work with linen and alpaca than burlap.
It seems weird, though. Like, if they saw a guy walking around the yard with a burlap suit, you think the guards would be like, hey, what the fuck's your deal? Like,
maybe he started... Maybe it was really practical. Maybe he started off making, like, little needles for tiny shivin, you know?
Yeah, little just inconvenient shivs. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe he was... maybe his plan was to be the prison tattoo artist and he couldn't draw.
Oh, sure. Yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, the opening scene of this movie, though, is like a fast cut of Jeffrey Rush being a tailor.
Yep.
And it was pretty amazing.
Over the credits, he's busting out a suit with all the like suit tools and chalk and shit. Oh, it's super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Zach, does he have a sweatshop in the back of his shop?
Yeah, he sure does.
It very much seems like he does.
Yeah. My impression was he does the like designing and measuring and cutting, and then somehow like an army of slaves is making all these suits. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so he works in fashion.
Well, I mean, yeah, essentially.
Zing.
Bazing. Yeah. Speaking of suits, so Seth, you touched on this. Apparently, I've never gotten a suit at a high-end enough establishment, but I wrote here, I'm pretty sure Jeffrey Rush just asked Pierce Brosnan which way his dong hangs, and I guess to account for the extra meat in the cut of the suit, presumably.
Yeah, you leave a little extra space to whichever side you dress.
Mm-hmm. This is baffling. I mean, it makes sense in a practical way, but yeah.
Zach, have you never listened to the recordings of LBJ on the phone in the White House?
Oh, yeah. All right. It's very important there.
Sure.
Oh, it's up in my bunghole.
I need more space in my bunghole. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. So Pierce answers with, quote, never know where the bloody thing hangs these days. Bobs around like a bloody windsock. Which
God.
There's no comedy in this movie, but that was at like minute 10, and it really it was a fun little aside, I would say. Yeah.
Has he just been letting people use his penis as a speed bag at the boxing gym?
Like, well, as said previously,
sausage casing full of water? I don't like what the fuck.
Unclear.
And pebbles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Water and pebbles. Mm.
Well, so do you want to talk about Pierce's conquests a bit? Because boy, does he suck. Yeah.
Conquest.
She was looking for a conquest.
No, great not song. Not in a fun Jack White sort of situation.
Not
well,
at all.
It's a cover, but yeah.
Is it? Who did the original?
Yeah, that's an old like kind of semi-standard.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, basically...
No, stop. I can't... People get mad at me sometimes for correcting them when I correct them. If it's a fact and you were wrong, you're not allowed to get mad at me for correcting Dad, okay? Like... Give me a fucking complex.
Also, I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. You're
right. If Lee says anything about music, I just go, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, no, I apologize, Lee.
Thank you. It's okay. I'm sorry. I overreacted.
No, well, not really, but. Yeah, so Pierce Brosnan is a real piece of shit.
He's a real he's a real cocksman, that one. Yeah. God, he sucks.
He is a real cocksman. And. Like I said earlier, he is like a shitty James Bond, but he has no suave. He's just
he also
you want to go fuck?
He was a shitty James Bond.
Well, yeah. This seems like really purposeful casting then.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, had Timothy Dalton's James Bond career been a little more successful, maybe he would have also been in the running for this role.
Was this the middle of his James Bond tenure? I think
he had one more. He had one more to come out. Die Another Day was 2002, I believe.
Oh, and those... yeah, but this was definitely in a waning James Bond period because after GoldenEye, it all kind of went downhill.
GoldenEye is really the only full on good one he made.
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Are you saying Denise Richard as a nuclear scientist?
You mean Christmas Jones?
I do mean Christmas Jones.
And I thought Christmas only came once a year.
Fireworks.
Yeah. James, you have never brought a woman to climax. Not intentionally.
Oh, well, speaking of that.
James Bond is the most selfish lover there is.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that. So, Pierce Brosnan, who has just the most ridiculous name. What was his name? Osnard?
Oh, yeah, it's fucking insane. I don't remember.
I mean, that sounds British.
Yeah. Like, a bit much. It sounds ridiculous, is what it sounds.
Yeah.
And Andy Arsenard is his name. And he successfully seduces, and by seduces means does that meme where it's just like a bird that looks at you and says, "Want some fuck?"
Yeah, literally, yes.
To a woman in the embassy.
Yeah.
And they just have the most uncomfortable, confusing sex scene possible. And it goes on for way too long. So I thought that maybe that this movie was basically a remake of A Fish Called Wanda, because it's like a farce with a super uncomfortable sex scene.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a plot that's kind of all over the place.
I thought this was like a weird, shittier revamp.
Yeah.
Because it's a farce with a really, really bad sex scene.
So the sex scene with that woman in particular, I wrote so that he gets a phone call in the middle of it, and then they stop having sex, they part from one another, and then like 5 seconds after that, his sounds and face are like somebody just shot him in the dick with a paintball gun, and they haven't been having sex for like 7 to 8 seconds. Like, he's just he's laying there on the bed, just like, and I'm like,
is the implication that he like spontaneously had an orgasm?
No,
like,
I think he may have never had sex in real life. I think he might be celibate as a human. Like,
I think
it's so weird. It's so weird.
It's very confusing.
Yeah.
And he meets Jamie Lee and he tries to have sex with her, and it's very uncomfortable. He's all like touching her.
Well, you mean the first time, like in the when they're swimming, or the second time when it's like full on rape?
The swimming time when he not the second time when he almost rapes her.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's uncomfortable. He's the worst. He's the worst.
To lighten the mood a little bit. You guys know that Jamie Lee Curtis has a title in the British nobility, right?
What? How?
She does?
Her husband is famed director Christopher Guest.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that. Wow.
Who is like who is a baron or some shit like that. He inherited it from his father.
Ooh.
And she is like a baroness or something.
Damn. Well, I mean, she's earned it. But
yeah,
I'm on
I mean,
board.
Unfortunately, it cannot pass to their children because their children are adopted.
Their children, Lindsay Lohan and I don't know, whoever else.
Yeah, someone else. That...
John Michael Higgins, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say John Leguizamo, and I was like, that doesn't make sense, but I'm down for it.
No, so yeah, the title will pass to either his brother or his brother's firstborn.
Sure. Okay.
Christopher Guest actually makes a point of going to as many House of Lords meetings as he can, and he will only vote when the vote is to decrease the power of the House of Lords because he thinks that it's stupid.
Nice. That's awesome.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Zach, what points you got for this movie? It's very complicated and convoluted.
Yeah.
It's a spy movie. Yeah. It's a not fun spy movie.
Well, I mean, parts of it were fun insofar as, and this is the thing that I like doing in movies, is trying to, you know, solve all the mysteries before they occur. And, like, I knew that Jeffrey Rush was bullshitting everyone, immediately, and I was just trying to figure out what his endgame was. And was he just going to, like, fuck over Pierce Brosnan, and Pierce Brosnan would get his comeuppance, and Jeffrey Rush would solve all of his financial woes and all of his friends' financial woes through Pierce Brosnan being such a weird star fucker.
Yeah.
That wasn't quite the case. And so that was fun for me. I enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
Okay, you like doing a little bit of detective work.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting point. I thought, so Jeffrey Rush is like constantly stepped on in this movie. Like he gets no respect from anyone and they make a big point of it. And so I thought, I thought it was going to be like, he somehow gets actual respect or actual power. And it wasn't like, it was.
Yeah, no, he didn't. Pierce Brosnan wins.
He gets all the money.
$15 million.
Yeah. And like,
so what you're telling me is this movie is fairly realistic in that the shitty person, the shitty person who has knowledge of how the situation works tends to win.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. The only other thing I had, which again we touched on several times, is I have written, "Holy shit, Brendan Gleeson is playing a Panamanian," which goddamn.
Oh yeah, Brendan Gleeson, noted Irishman.
So did they? Did they make him just really tan?
They did.
Like, what's the...
very tan, very greasy.
Yeah,
very drunk.
Tan.
Did
and
he wear
he just
a Che hat at all?
Terrible, or terrible a accent hat? Work.
Yeah, I was gonna say his accent,
work.
His accent is Scarface, but instead of coked up and excited, he's just like drunk and sloppy. It's just Scarface though.
Yeah.
It's so fucked.
Oh.
Up. Ugh.
Oh, there's this great scene where Pierce Brosnan has just basically solicited and kind of blackmailed Jeffrey Rush into getting Pierce Brosnan into the higher up social scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Brendan Gleeson is there, whose name is Abraxas, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a dope fucking name.
Yeah.
A Santana album because Santana sucks.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that's his last name. His first name is Mickey, which is not nearly
which
as cool.
Which is Irish, turns out.
You know, one of his parents was Irish. And
so,
one of his parents was not Panamanian, but, you know.
Abraxas, Brendan Gleeson, is like
sounds
complaining.
Like an American Gladiator.
Gleeson, Abraxas.
He's,
Rockman.
He's in this club and he's like complaining about how all of the other rich people around have like basically fucked over the country and, you know, in a post Noriega world have really made things really, really shitty. And, in order to try to, like, stop Brendan Gleeson from causing a scene, Jeffrey Rush makes the best threat that I've ever heard in my life, and that's, if you make any more trouble, I'll never cut you a new suit.
And it shuts him up. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, okay.
Because apparently, Jeffrey Rush's suits are gold. Yeah. If you have a suit by Jeffrey Rush, then you have a portal into any level of Panamanian society.
Which is weird.
That's
because
interesting.
Later on, when they're all at his place and they're getting drunk, they're like giving him shit for like fucking Brendan Gleeson, Chris Farley's out of one of the jackets. Like he's all drunk and he just rips it to shit. And then he's like, this thing fits like garbage. I'm going to go down to Armani. And then they all imply that Armani's much better and cheaper. I don't like, yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah, the cheaper. Yeah. Cheaper, but at least the same quality. And Jeffrey Rush is like, you idiot morons.
Yeah.
You have no idea. Like, nobody wants Italian cuts first.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Well,
yeah, no.
I mean, Lee, you know, nobody wants a goddamn Italian cut.
No. Ugh.
As the best dressed of the faking movie ilk.
Yeah, for sure.
Isn't that you? I thought it was you.
It used to be me, but I have been in grad school for too long.
I mean, I'm wearing a cat tank top right now, and that's a pretty like that's a pretty normal thing for me.
Well, but it's you're the most Tuesdays. Fashion forward. I have turned into garbage. But
we can all agree that Zach has no taste in his
True. Yeah. And we can all agree that an Italian cut is a bullshit cut of soup.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, he also talks about double-breasted things, and I'm like, no, nobody wants to wear a double breast anymore.
Those
I
was gonna say, had even, a comeback last summer.
But I don't want to look like a Frankenstein's monster.
The Steve Harvey? Nobody wants the Steve Harvey.
Fuck, I don't want to look like a box that has sleeves. Sorry. Anyway, they complain about his suits, and Jeffrey Rush is very offended by this because he basically in his post-criminal career has become like his embodied by being this incredibly
he takes
hot...
a lot of pride in what he does
a very very high-end tailor that really caters to the creme de la creme, or the scream, you might say. Panamanian society.
Wait The scream of the crop.
There it is. Oh, yep. Damn.
There we go. It's a thing.
That's all I got. You have anything else?
I have a couple of actors.
You said there's a lot more cast members here.
But they're like not really cast members. They're pretty incidental.
Sure.
For instance, just happened to have been in the movie.
Yeah, as weird bit players. Martin Ferrero, of Jurassic Park fame, the lawyer in Jurassic Park.
Oh,
Gennaro. Yeah.
Uh-huh. He's in there. I don't even remember who he played. John Polito is in there.
Ooh, John Polito.
Yeah.
Is he?
He plays a bank manager.
The guy, he's in every Coen Brothers movie. Uh-huh. He just died recently.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, is he the one that's in the Breaking Bad and all that stuff? He plays like the old guy. Am I thinking of somebody else?
I don't think so.
I think you might be thinking of someone else. John Polito is in the Big Lebowski, he's the private eye that's also on the case.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in all Coen Brothers movies, essentially.
Yes, okay. They love John Polito.
Sure.
Yeah. He passed in 2016.
Pretty recently.
Okay.
We have Dylan Baker.
Oh man, favorite of the show.
Dylan Baker plays this like after you know we've been dealing with MI6 and the CIA. He's like a military general that used to be in Panama,
and fuck
there's
some
like
shit
all this.
Up.
There's this like kind of hilarious farcical, and I'm not sure how farcical it was actually supposed to be, but it came off as very ridiculous to me. He plays this general that was in charge of the U.S. forces in Panama and had to pull out, and like as they pull out in a cutscene, he's like tearfully saluting the flag, so upset, and he's like, oh, you know, like MacArthur, he's like, oh, I shall return.
Yeah.
And all sorts of, like,
stupid bullshit like that.
I just, like, he should have been the only American cast member on Kids in the Hall. Like, him in a dramatic role makes no fucking sense.
No, he looks way too much like Mark McKinney.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean,
Mark McKinney could play Dylan Baker in the Dylan Baker story.
Yeah. Dylan Baker is a little more fish-lipped.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Yeah, that's true. But that's because Mark McKinney's Canadian, word, yes. And Canadians have some British ancestry, and British people have no lips.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Fact.
Yeah. Have you seen Kenneth Branagh? I don't know how his nose doesn't melt off his face. Like, there's nothing to hold it up.
Where does all the gravity go?
As another, like, kind of throwaway British person, we have Ken Jennings, Dr. Kelso himself.
Oh, I didn't know he was British.
He's not British. He's an American.
But he's playing a British character.
No, it's MI6 met with the CIA, and the CIA convinces the U.S. military to invade Panama.
Yeah.
Sure, there's layers of...
Did we mention this is fucking complicated? Yeah.
Yeah. and then
the main character is a tailor.
yeah.
And the only other like person that just seeing I immediately recognized was Jonathan Hyde. We'll say Papa Jumanji himself.
Oh,
the guy
shit.
Who played the dad in Jumanji.
I was gonna say, I know that name, but I don't know why.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, I like to call him Papa Jumanji.
Was he carrying a blunderbuss in the movie?
I don't even remember what he was doing. I think he was another throwaway British who cares?
Yeah, embassy something. Who knows?
Yeah. So those are the extra random actors that are in this for no reason.
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. So, Zach, do you have a 3-word or 4-word summary?
Oh, I do not. But yeah, you go nuts if you do.
Oh, mine is
in the spirit of the movie. It would take me at least 7,000 or 8,000 words, probably. So
yeah, mine is real quick, and of course, like a pop culture reference. It's Crisis on Infinite Panamas.
So is Brendan Gleeson the one who runs on a treadmill to go back in time and then dies? Like...
Yeah. And goes into the timosphere or whatever the fuck the Flash does and all of that.
Cosmic treadmill.
Oh my god.
That's a great arc, that series. But like,
Crisis on Infinite Earths is not a great arc. What are you talking about?
Oh my god, yeah, it is.
Well, it does have some, and it does do an effective reset of DC, but...
Yeah, they super needed it.
Yeah, they definitely did. They were too...
Bloated
and shitty.
What if the upcoming Flash movie, Flashpoint, I think is the name of it,
do
the cosmic treadmill to reset the entire DC
universe? What if they do a Flashpoint paradox and just kind of like fucking start over? That'd be great because they desperately need that.
Yeah. Also, what if they did that and then Grant Gustafson was the Flash all of a sudden because fucking the CW is killing it with their DC properties.
Not bad. So that's all my bullshit. Zach, right. What's your ratings?
Let's do a quick one before we get to ratings. Lee, you haven't seen this movie, but you know the cast, and we just told you all about it. And Seth, you have seen this movie. What do you guys think this movie cost to make?
Oh, I'm gonna. So 2001, you said?
2001.
$60 million.
Okay,
I'd say in the 20s.
$21 million. I honestly don't know how they did it. That seems wicked low for the...
Everybody was working for scale, I guess, because they thought they were going to win an Oscar.
Maybe? Unclear.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
I mean, we're also kind of warped by, like, the current, like, movie climate that they only make movies that cost $200 million to make.
Yeah, we were talking about
$2
million
to make. Yeah.
We talked about that last week, too. Yeah.
It's micro budgets or huge, gigantic, like, we're going to make our money back overseas if nothing else.
Yeah,
kind of
It's Duplass versus Avengers. Those are the only options. Yeah.
Ooh, I would watch that movie.
Crisis on Infinity Gauntlets.
something.
I would watch that movie too.
I would definitely watch that. That's like a Marvel versus DC awesome movie.
That sounds like a fucking arcade cabinet, though.
Oh yeah. I think Capcom already has done that.
Oh god, that fucking game. I love that game.
No one loves that game. What are you talking about?
It's so good.
So the IMDb is on this is 6.2.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's very, very middle of the road. Yeah.
So Zach, what are your ratings for the original and for Lee's?
Yeah, OG, I'm gonna go like a 5. I think it had its moments for sure. Like again, the stories were compelling. They were just too convoluted and stupid. And there's a lot of bullshit that we talked about that like really made it not enjoyable. Lee's, man, what a tale of whimsy. I'm really into that whole deal, so.
I will say, as a tease, I predicted this afternoon when I wrote my plot, I told Zach that if he is the right level of drunk when we record, he might actually cry. Did I come close even a little?
Yeah, no, this is my jam. Like, it's hard to hear it and not watch it, but, like, I cry at almost half of the movies I watch, and so, like, this...
I mean, you and me both.
Yeah, would have been one for sure. I'm going real high on this. I'll go 8.7. 8.7.
Damn.
Yeah. Whoa.
No, that just seemed like... All of the, and you made yours like very, not complicated, but there's a lot in there with the flashbacks and the whatnots and like.
Yeah, I mean, it's the move, my movie is more or less just a series of frame narratives.
Which I really appreciate, actually.
Yeah,
Also, I'll point out, like, think like the color palette from Chocolat. That's what I'm going for. Like that, like...
Oh, I don't like that at all.
So French.
Heightened whimsy kind of thing. Yeah. You know, it's all very warm.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, sorry. That just made it way worse for me.
I mean, I figured you were going to give me a bad score anyway. When you booed me at the end of my story.
That did happen.
I just don't really like all that orange, man. It's just not for me.
Or all that depth.
My least favorite color.
All that depth 5 o'clock shadow. Ugh. Arduous.
Gross. Yeah. Well, arduous. Yeah, that's a better word for it.
Seth, what do you got?
As for the original, like I said, I like to try to figure out mysteries in movies before they occur.
Sure.
And I think that this movie was almost good.
Okay.
Like it could have been good with a better screenwriter.
Oh, definitely. No, I fully agree. Like if it had, like, the story was in there, they just didn't like, they didn't extract it enough.
So I don't know. I think that like a solid 6.1 is probably like it's fine. And I like Pierce Brosnan is so gross and uncomfortable.
Oh. As a human being.
So he played the role to perfection.
I think. Yeah, no, he did a good job being a real piece of shit.
Yeah, I think he just did James Bond, but like raunchier. Like it was baffling.
He probably, like, it sounds a lot like he played a realistic James Bond.
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a less.
Like there's all kinds of, like, people make reinventions of characters all the time. Where like there was that a long time ago, I remember there was an interview with the people from Always Sunny where they were like, this is what the people from Seinfeld's lives would be like if they existed. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Everything would go wrong for them because they're shitty.
Yeah.
Like,
and they're all like hateable in every possible way. Yeah.
This is what James Bond's life would be. It would be him like just bouncing from meaningless sexual encounter to another, getting like reprimanded constantly
and
by his superiors.
Constantly shifted to a new station. So like what he does competently, but he also is like a liability.
He's
too good at his job to get rid of him in case they need him for something important. But they can't risk having him around.
Exactly. So I'd give this like a 6.1.
Sounds
maybe.
Like me at work.
Okay.
Sure. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. As for Lee's, counter to what you may think, Lee, I enjoyed it. You piece
Whoa!
Of shit.
I'm glad.
You fucko. I really like that kind of narrative. I like the structure of like weird little vignettes. I mean, you mentioned, oddly enough, you mentioned Mason and Dixon. And that's kind of the structure of Mason and Dixon, where you have a frame narrative and then you go into these little vignettes about the main characters.
Okay.
And like that's why I tend to like short stories better, but like short stories within an anthology sort of frame.
Yeah, sure. Like fucking what's that Dostoevsky one that's set in the graveyard?
Oh shit.
Or like I'm just going Russian because you used to study it. So like Red Cavalry, that's
yeah. Red Cavalry is really great.
It's terrific. It's outstanding. Yeah.
God, why can't I remember the author of Red Cavalry off the top of my head?
Gogol.
Oh, is that Nikolai Gogol?
Maybe.
I feel like it's way later than that. But because
our non-existent listeners, please write in and tell us. You could just tweet at us when this episode comes out.
Gogol was like early romantic, so that would put him in the in the mid 19th century. Red Cavalry wasn't written
until the early 20th century
because it was Soviet almost.
Hey, correct. Hey Seth, yeah. Quick
during
question
the Civil War.
Quick question. Uh-huh. What do you rate Lee's movie?
Oh. Lee,
Yitzhak Babel.
Oh, Yitzhak Babel. I like him a lot. Yitzhak Babel is actually, I can't believe I forgot his name because it's one of my...
Oh, Zach is pantomiming, blowing his brains out now.
He's one of my favorite, you know, short story authors from the early Soviet period and was ordained by the Soviet authorities. So, yeah, anyway, despite being Jewish, which is very confusing.
With a name like that?
I know, right? What could we do?
Insert Smucker's joke here.
Yep.
And
Lee, I'm gonna give you a 7.3.
Hey, that's a good fucking score.
Not bad. I liked it, and I think that it could be done very well. And as I said, I like that kind of frame narrative. So there you go.
All right.
I mean, it's a great fucking cast.
It is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially if you add in all these weird random fucks like like Martin Ferrero and Dylan Baker and Ken Jennings and
all of Lee's Harry Potter
that
people.
I added in
Papa Jumanji.
It sounds like the name that like a white screenwriter would give to a voodoo priest in a movie.
Baron Semedy.
Yeah,
like a hard-boiled story down in Nawlins.
Yeah.
Go see Papa Jumanji.
Baron Semedy. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
you know, from Live and Let Die.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, okay, Lee, you're not going to comment about Live and Let Die? All right, cool, whatever.
I'm going to be totally honest here for our listeners at home. You guys both cut out for me just a second ago, I don't know what good jokes that I missed, but I want to be surprised when the episode comes out, so don't tell me.
Cool, okay. All right. Okay, yeah. Right. Well, prepare for my disappointment when you don't get my reference.
that did definitely happen, yes.
Yeah, I was kind of sad. I was sure you're gonna pick up on it. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I might have, so now we'll never know.
Yeah.
All right, anyway, next week, we got me doing Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I'm quite looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to watching this.
Looking forward to watching it, too. It's been a long time, but I remember it being striking.
Yeah. It is a gorgeous-looking movie.
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I remember liking it quite a bit just in general, but like, wow. So make sure you come up with some visuals, Zach, because this movie
we're gonna need some real
you're gonna need to put me there.
Okay.
You're gonna need to get me in that theater. Oof. Surrounded by the THX and the Dolby and the IMAX.
It's hard in an audio format, but
he tried it, guys.